Good morning, everyone. Welcome to day 3 of the 8th General Assembly. I have been asked to read the health and safety briefing every morning. I have been asked. Thank you. Emergency evacuation. In the case of an emergency evacuation, an alarm will sound. Please follow the directions of our staff who will direct guests to the appropriate exits. There are 2 exits in Auckländer, one through entry point and one to the side behind the presenter's lectern. Please do not use lifts when evacuation is in process. Guests will be guided to the nearest assembly point either at the forefront of the hotel, lobby car park, or the Vincent Street entrance. Restrooms and toilets. The nearest restrooms are located off the main lobby. As you are exiting Auckländer, turn right. Men's restrooms are located to the left. Women's restrooms to the right. Smoking area. Smoking is prohibited inside the hotel. The allocated smoking area is located on our atrium lounge deck off level 1. First aid. If the circumstances arise that a guest requires first aid, please advise our staff for assistance. First aid kits are located in our lobby reception and each of our food and beverage outlets. Thank you. All right. We are going to have our keynote speaker for the morning, our mid-note speaker, his flight is delayed. So he will be arriving later this morning, but we will have a bit of a agenda shuffle this morning. Is there anyone in the room who is a Q-Braille owner or former owner?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's one.
Yes.
There's anyone missing one?
Anyone missing a Q-Braille? What? Maria said someone left a Braille device in the rest of us. Well, let's have a look at what it is, and I'll decide whether I want to tell them about it or not.
I'll take it back to you.
Okay, here you go. I don't have enough fingers to use one of those. All right. So we are going to have, as I said, a bit of a agenda shuffle. We'll be moving. I don't know. You know, some people would probably say moving something forward. Some people would say moving it back. But anyway, we'll be moving the. A few agenda items around this morning, so lest you're waiting for something in particular. So, hold on just 1 second. Yes? You may. 6?
Yesterday.
Well, not yet. 6. We need microphone 6. Clive's asleep.
Yesterday we were asked to bring along the Rubik key ring, but a number of us couldn't find that in our goodie bags. We had dinner with Ivan actually last night, and he was saying that they were distributed, and he doesn't have them anymore. So I was just wondering if there's a stash of them somewhere.
Maria, would you know about this?
It's boss, thank you. We have someone with the key rings here. If people want to raise their hands who don't have them, she will come around and give you one before his session starts.
Oh, thank you.
And do you want me to go on with my few announcements, Judy, while I've got the floor?
Yeah, please. Okay. Hang on. They're noisy key rings. And Okay, Maria has some announcements. Please pay attention.
You better be paying attention. Okay, we've done the Braille key rings. So Paul Brown has asked me if people are interested in knowing more about the opera and Braille at the opera to come see him. And you know who he is because he's quite loud.
He doesn't have the microphone nearly as much as you.
Well, we're the same. And for people who are going to the museum this afternoon, the transport from the hotel is booked for 3:15. So if you can be here about 10 past, one of my colleagues will have got your names on a little piece of paper and make sure you're there. And the transport has been arranged. And last but not least is the hotel menu, is the food menu for today, the 28th of May. So there's tea and coffee, obviously, for morning tea, and mini lamingtons, vegan.
What is it?
Mini lamingtons. They're a little cake with icing and...
Lanterns?
Like, lamingtons.
Like the things that make light?
No.
No.
I'm doing it again.
Sorry, what's the word?
Lamingtons.
Lamingtons.
No, lamb. Lamingtons.
Lamingtons? Can someone spell it, please? L-A-M-I-N-G-T, Lamington. All right.
It's a cake.
I'm an American. We.
It's a fancy cake. Cakes with either chocolate or raspberry icing around them, with some coconut on the outside. I'm not sure about the cream part, though.
Okay. Thank you. Lunch.
So lunch. The main item is assorted sushi with pickled ginger, soy and wasabi, GF, DF, V and VEG. The snack option is Bite Bliss, cranberry cashew, which is GF. Then you have the sweet item, which is a mini cheesecake. Then you have a whole fresh fruit and the usual bottled water and juice. And for the afternoon tea, you've got salmon and spinach quiche. And I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Oh, my. Okay. Thank you. Yes, Bill. Microphone, Bill, what number? Oh, he's an observer. He's an observer, Mike. Okay. There. Yep.
What?
You can.
Thank you.
Is to Maria. For the Maritime Museum this afternoon, there's a fee. Do we pay that as an entrance fee when we get there, or are we paying in advance?
Sorry, you pay when you get there.
And they take cards, I presume?
Yes. Yes.
Right. Thank you.
Yes. Did someone else ask for the floor? No. Okay. All right. We will move along. Mr. Argat Perez, we will hear about Braille Core Learning Method, a new approach to Braille teaching for both blind and sighted people. Ivan, are you on your way?
Yeah.
Ah, very good. Okay. All right.
Like that? Okay. Hello, good morning. This is Ivan Argote from Spain. So we are, I hope, fully awakened. So that's, we're fresh and ready, isn't it? Right. This is a Braille Core learning method. And we have this lovely plasticky thing trying to play around with the key rings, that's right. You might wonder, why is it needed or why is it useful to find a way of Braille teaching and learning not focused in a particular language? And that would be a very interesting point. Actually, what I try to do is focus on something which is not based on a language and then use it for any language whatsoever. And I do that, my approach leans on exactly what any person might first grasp before anything, any theory, any alphabet or anything. And that is, what is a shape? What is the space? My method is not focused on sighted people, neither on blind. It's focusing on what people feel and what people can feel with what people can see or what people can touch. So the concepts of up and down, left and right, can you hear me?
Yes?
Are absolutely essential, and they can be four letters. For the practice I've been taking, teaching this method to some blind people, I found it's very interesting to take it in a very experiential way and in a staggered manner. I've taught that method to blind people who already knew Braille, so they were relearning it. And they found it quite interesting. And for sighted people, I've been teaching as well this method. And what I try to do and focus is that there is no unique way, but rather it's quite adaptable to people. For example, trying to focus on empty dots, trying to focus on symmetry, and also on the mirror effect between different cells. And it's very useful to place cells together in different lines or create different lines of compounds of signs. Here on your paper, you can see that there are different compounds, and these are separated by the full cell dots occupied with the four sign. And this is enough for clarifying what are the cell boundaries. And this is important to figure out exactly what it is. So that's why I find it useful to catch all this first prior to learning the letters. And here, the paper, what you have here is an outline of the summary of the real full paper. There you can find in an appendix my contact details in case you wanted to get in touch or to get more information, or even in my way that I'm trying to translate it or adapt it to different language, to languages other than English. Actually, I am creating a new edition, adding some nuances as long as I am getting new feedback from people. As you can imagine, this is a never-ending process, this learning. So I think it might be enough for talking, and we might get into the nitty-gritty and take like a flight altogether. When you travel that far, you see things differently, and maybe you can get to know yourself better and what you're used to in from a different approach. So that's what we're going to be doing. Shall we take a flight or get the key rings out of the plastic thingy, the plastic bag? I'm going to describe what I'm going to be doing in case, I don't know if it's been recorded or anyone just could listen to what I'm doing and see, figure out. So this is a key ring. Arabic keyring, which shows, which can handle any braille pattern, and it can be sorted out by twisting its hinged parts, or moving its faces, or even you can move the chain looking at you, or the other way around, in the best way it suits your needs to better create the shape. Okay. First of all, I would like to show you that there are some letters which could be taught in a different way instead of doing alphabetically. So that alphabetically approach might be interesting to disregard it. That is because it goes into braille intricacies, and it will help you learning, help you differentiating shapes. So let's take the word dear, like dear friends, okay? Dear, or the word there, dear friends, will you dare jump off from the sky jump tower, for example, sky tower? And those words, dear and there, you're going to remove the letters R. So we are left with the D and the A and the E for elephant. So we're going to play only with these three letters to catch the meaning, okay? of and the way of that I'm teaching, these first letters, the first line of the alphabet. So here we go, for example, starting with the letter A, a single dot, and from that letter, we're going to take the B for vertical and C for horizontal. That is easy, that's right, there is nothing new here, but we should go on. Instead of going straight to the letter D, we're going to take a little jump forward and figure out in ink, in print. I know it may be some blind, may some blind people don't know how you draw the letter X in ink. Never mind, we can figure out it's two diagonal lines from top left to bottom right, and from from top right to bottom left. So with that, bearing that in mind, we're gonna figure out what word we do. When you see the word it in contracted Braille, in grade two, of course, you write the letter X, okay? So we're not gonna write the X, but we think about the word it is written with the X. So you say all together, exit, right? So what vowels are there being said? You say exit, the E, and the I. So let me please figure out and create the E in the Braille Rubik keyring. So here we go. I created the letter E. May you do please the same? Are we on the same page? Okay. I imagine, yes, we can go forward then. This is letter E and letter E. Shall we go then to the letter I, which we can flip the keyring as such and we can see the I. This is regarding the bottom dots of the cell. And this is the I for exit, right? Then, what letter is in the middle of the E and the I? Yes, if you're thinking about the G, you are right. G for golf. Okay, G is exactly, if we are drawing the upper square of the cell, it means that you are drawing the absolutely shape of the X with the two axes on it. So we're gonna, my approach also deals with describing the way in the dots are arranged in a different way of saying them. So I wouldn't say dots one, two, on the left and 4, 5 on the right. I would rather say, if it's more useful in some cases, dots 1, 5, the first diagonal blade, and then the other one is dots 4 and 2 from top right to bottom left. Okay, so therefore we created letter G, which in ink might think like the X, like the letter X, right? So we learned the A, from that we took the B and C, and then we took the letter E, and from that we took the letter E and I, and G. So here we go with the last part of the first line learning of the Braille alphabet, and we're gonna focus not exactly on the dots, but on the empty dots. And you might wonder, why would you like to focus on empty dots that are not perceivable by they cannot be perceived by touch, and you're right, they cannot be perceived by touch. You can see it if you use a print font though, like the one in my paper, or the one from Duxbury, for example. But even for blind people who are reading by touch, they can imagine. We can imagine and figure out what it is like. Okay, so we're going to focus on the empty dot. And the empty dot is going to be moving anti-clockwise. The letter D, if you can see, is exactly down on the middle left of the cell. So down down left on the upper square of the cell. And this is letter D. But this dot is going to be moving around. An anti-clockwise manner means that the next step, shall we create the letter F? So here we go. The letter F, we're showing exactly the cell focused the empty dot on the bottom or of the upper square right. So we moved the empty dot. Dot taking therefore dots 1, 2, and 4. But that empty dot is going to make keep on moving, and we're going to do it now, moving up to the it's going to be on the up right corner of the cell, and this is the letter H. Dots 1, 2, and 5. But focus on the dot 4, which has been moving around. That's the empty one. That's the key, the magic one. Okay, here we go. And we are sorted, only we have one letter left, which is the letter J for ending the 10 basic serial line of the dots. The J is made out of emptying the dot 1, that's top left, but dot. So the rest of the square is fully dotted, dots 2, 4, and 5, and dot 1 is empty, right? So we've seen, to wrap up this matter, that these dots, what they show is that we follow alphabetical order on some letters, which are D, F, H, and J. So using the lovely approach of consistency that UEB has, we would say do, from, have, and just, right? This is one thing I wanted to note, that my approach is much more useful for some alphabets and scripts than for others, and this is the case for English, because of the full usage and consistent usage of the whole bunch of braille cells available, every single cell can be described easily and with some mnemonics that also are useful for language and useful for the braille systematics themselves. Okay, so this is the basic line arranged in a different manner. You can see my table and you can figure out, and there are some tables, I think it's table 8, showing the all letters arranged in a different way. My paper deals with many topics. It's like a multi-headed approach. It deals with feedback that is going to be given about certain braille tables, about to approach their computer tables to their literary counterparts, to mirror them. There are many topics. I usually, when I give masterclasses worldwide, free masterclasses worldwide about this method, and if you wanted to get deeper into the onion and not on the first layer, then you can get up to 6 or 7 hours to learn in full, at last, the whole system that I am trying to create, because it's a full systematic. It is not a revolution on braille. It is just extending their principles. Some of them have not been fully explained when braille created it. So I'd like also to point out that using the grade 2 is very helpful for understanding the shapes. And shapes are very important. There are 19 different shapes. We can place them in arranging the signs according to what we intend to. We might want arranged signs with the same orientation, or we might want signs from different orientation to contrast them. We might want signs which do not differ from one another to see that there is no way of distinguishing them. Among these 19 unique shapes, there are 12 which are distinguishable shapes, and they can be arranged in a different pattern, and they total up to 32. And there are 31 non-distinguishable shapes that if we arrange them in different shape, signs, and if we arrange them, the non-distinguishable signs in shapes, there are just 7. So there are a total of 19 different shapes, 12 distinguishable and 7 non-distinguishable shapes. I found very useful, this is another point that I wanted to note, that sometimes when indicating dots in a cell, it's very useful to be focused on exactly what it is related to other letters that you may know. For example, if you think about the dot 2 for the comma, you can say middle right A, sorry, middle left A. Or if you think about the 4-5-6, sorry, oh, four, excuse me, 4-5-6, you can say this is the right L. So this is very useful. And for example, in many occasions I saw Braille books that might talk about the middle, the lower C, and they were referring to dots 2 and 5. However, it might not look fully accurate, middle C, because actually, lower C, because it's not the lower C, it's the middle C in this case, what is being referred. So it's useful to say, okay, we are using signs from the first row, the middle row, the top row, the middle row, or the bottom row. That's why it's useful to say upper row, and top row, and middle and bottom row. So they would say middle C, top C, or bottom C. just a minute, please. I would like to also show that some of the examples of how things can shapes can be understood, and there are on my table some examples of sentences showing those shapes in use. For example, if we say there are 5 or 6 people in a row, and we highlight or and row, then and we remove the R's, we are left with the O and the OU sign. With this kind of tip, it's useful, and you can get out of it the two signs, the OU sign and the O sign. You can put them one by the other, arranging first the O or first the OU, depending on what your didactic needs are. So I wrote down on the paper some other examples. For example, that is out of the question. And if you say that and out, these are the same shape twisted differently. And you can figure out T dots 2, 3, 4, 5 and O dots 1, 2, 5, 6. Now that we are here in New Zealand, I wanted to make an additional point and comment about my method. Always when you travel afar, you see things different. You are taking perspectives from your own approaches. So I'm going to show you, let me please give you this example, the Rangitoto Braille approach. And what is it? The Rangitoto is a volcano that I've been told that you can see it from different sides and you see exactly the same shape. Okay, in Braille, there are two of these shapes, unique ones, that are distinguishable by themselves, and they can be seen the same very way. It doesn't matter how you twisted the paper, all right? These shapes are the full cell occupied. That's the 4 sign, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And also the it sign, that's 1, 3, 4, 6. So those, just let me go like that here in this point. Here are the Rangitoto non-distinguishable invariable shapes. And I'd like to just point out a little bit of remark of what is the Braille order. And from here, I would like to hear what you have to say. To see what exactly approaches and feedback you might have on that point. Okay, the Braille order is a very useful tool to understand what signs are and what their order is, and not being focused on any alphabet or punctuation. I have found out 3 languages that carry this concept, Braille order. Those are English, Portuguese, and Spanish. Okay, I try to figure out, and you can see the tables on the paper, the table 1 and table 2, basically, that Braille order on lines 6 and 7 is not attending to any logic. They do, in some languages, keep some mnemonic on words, but it's not focused exactly on Braille systematics on line 6 and 7. Line 6 and 7, what they do is they collect every dot which is not derived from the first line. So which have that line 6, which has dots 3 and 4, 5, 6, any of the 4, 5, 6 dots, and line 7 having any or any whatsoever, any dot on the right column. What I did, and you can see there, is try to arrange a different approach to line 6 and 7. And you can see those on table 1. So with that bearing in mind, I just would like to say that only who tackles the impossible things, the absurd can get the impossible. Only trying to move away from what we took for granted can we improve the quality in life. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your attention. I'm really looking forward. And just before ending, I would like to let you know, please keep in touch. Give me any kind of feedback that you feel. I'm looking forward. And if you would like to get further explanation, of course, feel free. I'm very happy to share. Thank you. Thank you.
Would you like to take questions?
Yes, of course. And I'm ready for you to ask me whatever you'd like to. Sir?
Do we have any questions?
Is there any?
Any questions? None?
UK.
Oh, UK. What's your mic number?
Ivan, I was very intrigued that you rearranged line 7, which is the dot combinations involving dots 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reason for that? Because the order also matches the order of, for example, octave signs in the Braille music code. So was there a reason you rearranged the line 7?
Okay, thank you. the arrangement, it affects line 6 and 7 at the same time. And what I did is first I settled down the 5 lines that Braille signs would be arranged when he created. This is kind of hypothetical way. And in this arrangement, there are 5 lines. And in the first line, there is the empty dot and then the 10 letters, and then the 2 supplementary letters on the right and the right column. So they would say, I write up A and write B, B. And so forth in the five lines. From then, I created the 7 lines, removing some signs from the 5 first lines, and allocating in the 6 and 7 lines. And I try to mirror the same order that they are kept in the first 5 lines. So, for example, in line 6, I could take first the dot 3, adding the letters A and B from the right side. Then, adding the letters the dots 3 and 6, and taking the letter A and B. And then, adding the letters the dots 3, and 3 and 6 by themselves. This would be the line 6. And the line 7 would be likewise made. So for example, they should be first the dots 4 and 4 or 5, because they are the first letters, they would be on the first line. So they would be upper right A and upper right B as well. Then I could take the same dots and same patterns, adding the dot 6, which would stand for the supplementary signs on the fourth line, very much like the K and the L on the left column, but rather on the right column. So I would say right K and right L. Likewise, I would go further and take the dots on the lower cell, on the lower part of the cell, on the lower square,
okay.
And I would say dot 5 and dot 5, 6. So they would be middle right A and lower, sorry, top B, right? Sorry, bottom B, I would say, excuse me, I meant bottom B, bottom right B. And likewise, I would add the very last dot that we used on that column, the right column, and it will be the dot 6, so it will be the right bottom A, dot 6.
Thank you.
I don't know if it's enough, if it helps this explanation.
Amanda?
Hello?
Yeah, I think it's working now. Yeah, Ivan, thanks for your presentation. I just have a question. Are you using your system exclusively with people who are already literate, or are you using it also with children who, like, by already literate, I mean people who understand the rules of spelling and the way words are made and are able to comprehend from the written word, or are you using it also with children who are just starting to, who we're teaching literacy through the Braille medium?
Well, this is a good point. I haven't been able to find children to teach it. I would love to, but anyway, the principles I would use would be close the same, because I wouldn't be focusing on exactly the letters first, but rather on the meaning of what shapes, and considering that with the hands you perceive yourself and you perceive the world around you, and that's the point I would be highlighting, teaching anyone, any blind or any child as well, being blind or not, trying to focus on what are their needs and their hopes and their understanding. But unfortunately, I haven't found any child yet to teach it. I've been teaching mainly to sighted people and to blind people. But if I find any child, I would not focus, of course, on letters. I would focus first on what they have to feel, what they have to understand, what is different and what is alike, and why is it alike and why is different. So I don't know if it answers your question.
So sort of the shapes and the orientation of
yes.
the patterns and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And then,
that's great. Thank
and
you.
And then the letters.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your attention.
We have a goodie bag here for you.
Thank you.
From Banzette. Here's a bag. Things.
Thank you very much.
I know there's a chocolate bar there.
Right. Thank you very much.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Thank you for your attention.
Okay, Tina Hertzberg. You're up. Thank you. It's a little late to be asking this, but when you paper presenters, if you could start out by just identifying where you're from and what your connection is there, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Well, hello. Yay. So I'm just in time for the reminder, so this is the good news. My name is Tina Hertzberg, and I am a professor, and I coordinate the Visual Impairment Education Program at the University of South Carolina Upstate. We are the only training program in our state for individuals who would like to become a TVI. And I'm very excited that actually in 1 week we are beginning an orientation and mobility program, so it's a lot of fun right now in South Carolina. Today, though, I am absolutely honored to be here and to share a little bit about a research project from last spring. And we called it Teaching Students in Grades 2 to 5 How to Access, Interpret, and Create Tactile Line Plots, Pictographs, and Bar Graphs. Now, the first thing you probably noticed that I said that we, well, it's I have a partner that is not here with me, but that she was there every step of the way with the research and then helped me with the final edits on the paper, and that is Dr. Penny Rosenblum, and so I would like to send a thank you to her. I don't know if she's live streaming with us or not, but thank you, Penny, if you are. So what happened is that I was able to, I was awarded a small pot of money, $15,000, to create two units of instruction about how do you actually really approach tactographics. Because in the United States, before this, Penny had led a project where they had created materials and an iPad app for middle school students. And the one thing that was one of the big takeaways from the teachers and the students is that really middle school is way too late to be learning how to interpret tactographics. And I absolutely agree with that, and that's why we pursued this project. And so what we did is we developed two instructional units. With the funding, we did not have enough funding to like create an iPad app, but we did have funding to create audio files as well as the tactographics in two different mediums. We had we used the materials that basically we had access to. So I have a PixBlaster embosser. So all of the graphics were produced with this PixBlaster. It's similar to a Tiger embosser, if you may have one of those. And then the second medium that we used was the pictures in a flash from HumanWare, because once again, that's exactly what I have as part of our TVI training program. We really wanted to have a third medium, but we did not have access, either one of us, to a thermoform machine. And actually, it's very interesting, in South Carolina, I think we are down to maybe one thermoform machine in the entire state. So that's part of the issue. Now, I say that because what's so interesting is that we have one thermoform machine in our entire state, but yet that is how the graphics in South Carolina come on our standardized assessments. So that's why I was really interested, but we just couldn't figure out how to make that work. So what we did is we wanted to use authentic science information and data as part of the units. Because number one, we thought it might be motivating to learn about blue whales and lemurs, and it turns out we were right. It was very motivating for the students. And then the second part is that we know they're going to see graphics in their science, in their math classes, and so we kind of wanted to model after that as well. So each of the units contained a teacher guide. We wanted to know teachers from step one, two, three, four, know exactly what we were hoping that they would do. We wanted it to be implemented very similarly across the students. We also had a tactile graphic of the animal as well as four content graphics for each unit. There was an audio file of the unit content, and we're actually going to play just a snippet in a moment. We had a fun fact sheets for the different animals. Turned out that was a big hit. The students loved them, wanted to go home and share with their families about what they had learned. And we provided extension activities because we actually wanted every child to make the different types of graphics that they were learning to explore and to interpret. Because we really believe that is a great way to really double check, does this child really understand, and to continue to build that conceptual knowledge. And that turned out not only to be really like a great learning tool, it was a very motivating because the students really had fun being able to create their graphics. And so we wanted to make sure that, once again, you know, that everything was implemented similarly, so we went ahead and we sent them a box of materials. And so they had embossed graph paper from American Printing House for the Blind. We had their textures, the carousel of textures. We provided that. We provided some whole sheets, as well as like when they were going to make pictographs, we cut them up meticulously for 1-inch squares and put them in baggies. Yes, there are some just like little things like that that took quite a bit of time. We were surprised. But once again, we wanted the students to be able to have those opportunities, and we wanted to make sure that everybody had the same materials. Although teachers were welcome when they were creating the graphics that they wanted to add to the collection, they could. We also sent things like wiki sticks, a ruler, different things like that, a braille ruler, just so that they'd have some materials. So a little bit about the students that participated. We had 28 students. I have to say that was amazing because we really originally were hoping to recruit 25, and we cut it off at 28 because simply we didn't have that many more materials. I wanted to have a couple of sets to be able, like when I come here or anywhere else, to be able to share the graphics. So that was the number one, I think, was a great takeaway for me, was that teachers were really interested in having more materials to how to teach students to use Touch Graphics. So we had individuals, students from 16 different states within the United States. It was a variety of geographically diverse states, including Hawaii, we were very excited about. We had students, six of them were second graders, six of them were third graders, six of them were fifth graders, and the big class was fourth grade with 10. Almost exactly equal as far as gender. And then I thought you might be interested a little bit about what kind of setting were the students served in. So two were at a school for the blind, 24 were served by an itinerant TVI in their neighborhood schools, one was served by a TVI in a resource room in a public school, and one was homeschooled but received services from the TVI at home, provided by the district where the child lived. We did not ask if students had additional disabilities, but I will tell you that we gave them a spot just to tell us anything about their child that they wanted to share. Two of the parents shared that their students were deafblind, and then several of the teachers indicated that either their student read at grade level or were reading below grade level. I think only one, if I remember correctly, said their child was reading above grade level. We also asked the TVIs, hey, what kind of experience does your child have with pictographs, with bar graphs, with line plots? And most of them said they were either not familiar at all, they had not been introduced to them formally, or they were only somewhat familiar with them. So throughout the units, we really wanted to encourage students to be able to develop a consistent approach when they're exploring Toucher graphics to make sure they're not missing key information in that graphic. And so we taught them very specific strategies for approaching different types of graphics. Like, where will you find a key? Where will the title be on a graphic? Then also, if there is an x-axis and a y-axis, where will you find those labels? And so what happened is half of the students received one of the units in the PEOF graphics, and half of them got the other ones in embossed, and then for the other unit we flip-flopped it so that we really could see like their experiences across the different types of how they were made. So a little bit about the Lemur unit. So it began every time with kind of an introduction about the animal. And then they, right afterward, were provided a tactile drawing of the lemur. I think my favorite part of the lemur was actually the very long tail, that the tail was actually longer than the body, just like it is in life, and that it had the stripes with it. So there are copies of the graphics at the sharing table, and I invite you to look at those. And if you have feedback, I would just absolutely love that. And then students also got to listen to the sound of the lemur, and then they got the opportunity to practice jumping like a lemur. Big hit. So I thought y'all might enjoy hearing just the first like 45 seconds of what the students would hear. So this is video one.
Do you know what a lemur sounds like? Let's listen. Ooh. Ooh. You can hear a lemur's call from up to half a mile away. It takes most people 10 minutes to walk half a mile, so that is a long way for sound to travel. Male lemurs make really loud sounds to let other lemurs know that this is their territory or home. They are telling other male lemurs to stay away. Because of the sound of their call, their glowing eyes, and their activity at nighttime, some people think lemurs are like ghosts.
And that was the first 45 seconds of what all the students got to listen. So we did. We wanted to be fun, and that's Penny's voice, not mine. But yeah, so they got to, you know, become acquainted first with the animal, and then we introduced the graphics. So in Unit 1, they were introduced to line plots and to pictographs. And they actually were introduced to the line plots first. And so we walked them through how you explore. There were running heads on the graphics, because you will find that a lot in textbooks. There were transcriber's notes. We learned that many of the students really had never paid attention to transcriber's notes before. I was a little sad, as much time as I've spent on them over the years, to hear that. But I hear laughs, so I'm assuming I'm not the only one. Where would you find the title? Where are the labels on a line plot? The number line at the bottom of the line plot, as well as the errors. And so what I have now is a second short video, but I want to give it a little bit of a preview to it. So this was a child who was not familiar at all with line plots before starting this unit. He had completed the unit. He had designed his own live plot. As a matter of fact, he was so excited. We got this video because his teacher shared it, because he wanted to share it with us, which I just think that is lovely. They also sent a picture of the line plot, too, with the child holding it with this huge grin on his face. So here's video two.
How many trees had two nests?
One. Wait, this one. I'm gonna use one of the skills. Keep put the left index finger on it on a two, and then put my right hand in with my left index finger right here on a two, anchor it.
Mm-hmm.
And then move the right index finger up the page until I can no longer feel any foam. And I'm gonna do that. One, two, three. And then I'm going to sign. One, two, three.
That looks gorgeous.
Is perfect form. There is one tree with four nests.
One tree?
Uh-huh. Only one.
Oh, wait. There's one right there. Then above.
So listen to this. There's one tree with four nests. What you're looking at down there are the number of nests. That's one nest.
Oh.
That's two nests. That's three four. Nests. There's four nests. Yeah.
I got it.
Okay. You got it.
So I just need one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. These little things resemble the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah.
So we'll pause there. So what I love about that is by creating this and then having them, like the teachers would create some questions, we had given them some, but they could create others, is that she was able to identify an error in how they were approaching it and then able to fix that so that they would understand that afterwards. And so I just love how that kind of happened quite naturally. But did you notice that the child use a word like verify? Yes. I was like, that's something we had introduced. I was like, oh. And then they talked about with the right hand, left hand, and what they're being able to do, and be able to like verbalize that and that thinking aloud as they're actually doing it. So I thought that was kind of a nice example. I mean, it's great always to hear from adults, but I love when we hear from kids. So afterwards, they were introduced to pictographs. And just in case anybody wondered, because everything was whole numbers, we were talking about young students, the graphics were only produced in UEB. There was no reason for Nemeth, and so they were all UEB graphics. So they were told that one square means one lemur, and we actually wrote that out so we would not need to go into Nemeth. We made that just very easy on ourselves. And then we introduced this time also the students to guide dogs, which was also something kind of new for some of the young students. I think, though, from the information we got back from the teachers on the follow-up survey and the emails they sent, is just how motivated that their students were to learn about endangered species that were featured in the instructional units. So I really think we were on to something there. And then the other part about having these fun facts, things that they could go and share with family members. We gave them in print and braille so they could share either one that they needed with their family. And then also just that the teachers, almost almost all of them talked about the value of their students creating tautographics, and a lot of them said they had not done that before with their students, but that was something they were taking away with them that they wanted to change, like instructionally themselves. So I'm also very interested in how do we change teacher practices, and so I was like, wow, that's kind of cool, by like modeling and letting them use it with their students, and then I think them seeing the value with their students actually like changed in instructional practice. So the second unit were blue whales. And so they started with about the size and the weight of the whale. They once again got to hear what a whale sounds like. And then the other part, because we thought it's a little abstract to think about how just large a whale is. So what it is, the typical length is 90 feet. And so what we did is we cut up lengths of ropes at 90 feet. And then the students would actually like walk all the way down. And I have some videos I didn't include, but they were just like amazed, like, I need to keep on walking. More, more, more. And it's like, yep, keep on going. And they were like, wow, that's super long. It's funny because my, at the time, 14-year-old daughter helped me cut out these lengths of string. And she was amazed by that, too. She had no idea that a blue whale was that long. So learning for everyone. So in the bar graphs, not a surprise, they were introduced to the title, the axis and label, the y-axis and label, categories on the x-axis, values on the y-axis, grid lines, we're going to talk more about grid lines, and then locating the height of a bar and verifying the height of the bar. So those last things, from what we heard from the teacher, were the three most difficult aspects of bar graphs. So in this next video, we have a student who is a second grader, probably about 7, 8 years old, who is working with one of the provided graphics. And if I remember right, it was an embossed copy that she was working with. So let's hear a little bit about her experience.
Find the number that matches the letter. Move up the A bar and leave your right index finger there. Look at the 6, and if you do not see the 6, you're incorrect. Now, look at the D bar. Leave your right index finger on the top of the D bar. Move your left index finger to the number. To my counting, it shows 3 right now.
I think we'll go ahead and pause
What's
there.
What's your total?
So I love how the students like verbalized. I think that was something that was actually a really nice surprise because we encouraged it, but we weren't sure. It's like, especially because we weren't there, is what it happened. But we went and we actually by Zoom observed at least one lesson for half of the students. And then, like I said, we had several others that sent us videos. And almost all of them, actually, the student was actually doing a really nice job with describing what they were doing with their hands. So we had a follow-up survey. This is one of the things, you know, as soon as you finish a project, you're like, darn, why didn't we have a follow-up survey? So quick, go back to the IRB, send an amendment, and then send it out, and let's just please, teachers, fill it out. So 16 of the 28 did so. Considering, I mean, how fast we got it through, it wasn't 28. That was what I was hoping for. But, you know, hey, 16's not bad. So we asked them how valuable were the units in helping their students to learn to systematically explore as well as locate, interpret information in tautographics. And so we used a Likert scale, 1 being strongly disagree, all the way to 5, which was strongly agree. So we asked them, what was the rating for the line plot and pictograph unit in helping their students to learn about these two different types of graphics? And it was 4.69. And then the bar graphs was 4.82. So yeah, that's why we were pretty pleased. And it really indicating that the TESVIs found the units that were very helpful. And then like the other part about it, even though it wasn't on the follow-up survey, is when students asked their teachers to send us an email, we actually had, I think it was 3 or 4 families who sent us emails thanking us because they could see the difference in their child. And then they were just delighted that their students were interested and wanted to learn more about tactographics. And so I have to say it was very reinforcing to me. And we already have submitted a grant proposal. To IES, we're just waiting to hear back right now. If we don't get it, we want to try again, because I am, what this would be, this we are proposing 12 units, and these first two, we would like learn from what we learned from this, and we would change them, but we would pattern the other 10 units, really trying to focus on like 12 of the most common graphics that students are going to see before they enter fifth grade. So that I'm hoping that we'll have some great news one day about that. So we asked the teachers about how efficient were their students with the two different types of graphics, because everybody got one unit in one method and one in the other method. So 5 of the TVIs said my students were equally efficient. Didn't really matter to them which one they received. I'm like, okay. So 5 out of 16, that's not bad. Then we had 2 that said that their students were more efficient with the computer generated, the embossed ones from the Pic Blaster. So that's what, 7. We had 3 that didn't answer the question. And then we had 6 that actually said their student was more efficient with the PEOFF graphics. I really didn't know what to expect on that, because that's not a question that I had ever asked before with that. Now, there was a follow-up question about, like, why you thought this. And I think of the 6 that I wanted to talk about, that 2 of those students had usable vision, and they talked about that there was visual contrast to that graphic, and it actually was very helpful to those 2 students with low vision. So of those 6, 2 had some usable vision, and that was part of the reason they liked the PEOFF graphics. So not surprisingly, there were still a few areas of difficulty for the students, because we asked about that too. We really wanted to know. We had a couple of them that said that it was just difficult sometimes for their students to follow the horizontal grid lines. And I have to say that honestly, over time, I've seen that where students have like slowly like drifted down and didn't realize they had either drifted up or down and gotten to a different line. So that was not terribly surprising. So that's one thing, if we go back, that we know, especially with the bar graphs, that we'd want to include even more practice with that, because that seems to still be an area of need. And then a couple of the TVIs talked about that when they were reading the bars, that the bars that were further away from the y-axis were more difficult, because sometimes they have to track through the other bars to come back. And so it was sometimes a little more difficult for them to really figure out the value, and in particular if it was between a grid line. Because we did do that. We think that's really important for our students to learn how to do that. And so, and then I will tell you, we had 2 other teachers that reported, yeah, especially when those values are between the grid bars, it's sometimes difficult for the students to kind of piece together that precise number. So that was kind of a takeaway, is that, you know, also on the graphics we're producing, are we using increments? Because, like, especially, we didn't use, like, increments of 10, but I've seen this in other places where they use, like, increments of 10, and quite honestly, I couldn't tell you if it was supposed to be 43 or 44. I could tell it was a little closer to 40 than 50, but I couldn't tell you that. And so, but if we think about, like, in, like, testing situations, that could that put our child at a disadvantage by not having that precise information? So I'm not sure what to do with that information yet. It's just kind of falling away in my mind, and I'm hoping I think of some potential solutions. So if y'all have some advice on that, I'd love to hear that too. And then some thoughts as you're working with young Braille readers in wherever you might be, is that I think this is another study that just adds to what we already know, is that young readers benefit from explicit instruction in how to systematically search and explore a tactographic, and then have learned specific strategies for locating, interpreting, and verifying key information in tactographics. Next one doesn't surprise me at all. that when we use meaningful and engaging materials, our students are going to be more likely to be motivated to learn those new strategies. We saw that in this case. I think the third one is that, you know, students really benefited from being able to learn to use graphics in different types of paper, because quite honestly, they're going in throughout their lifespan probably to receive graphics made in multiple ways. And so the more experience that they receive, whether it's once they've created themselves, whether it's the payoff, whether it's a thermoform, whether it is an embosser, just how do we get as familiar as possible so that we, you know, it's ease of reading no matter what kind of graphic we're presented. And then students really benefit from creating their own tactographics, and engaging in that creation process allows students to demonstrate their learning. And then it offers us as teachers opportunities to provide feedback and reteach as needed, things that we might not know otherwise. So thank you so much. Questions? And then, like I said, if y'all have some advice and things for me, I would certainly appreciate it, especially as we want to pursue funding to build upon this work.
Roaming one. Thank you so much for that presentation. As the New Zealand equivalent of a TVI, I'm an RTV, who works a lot with kids who are using tactile graphics, it was really important to hear what you had to say. I'm just wondering what sort of materials you were using for your students to make their own, when they were making their own tactile graphics. Were they doing that on... What materials were you using?
So this time we elected to go with more of a collage, and so we gave them plain braille paper. We gave them different graph paper with different sizes of squares. We also, like I said, actually gave them 1-inch squares, so to make the pictographs, to make them easy for them. We gave them wiki sticks. We taught them also though how to be able to put all your labels and things like that using your Braille writer. So one of the recommendations, and actually the teachers were lovely, is they gave us probably 10 more extension things that we could do. And one of the things they said, hey, you should actually teach them to be able to do this whole graphic using their Braille writer. And I think that's something we could easily do. And so, like I said, we used materials that I had access to. Primarily, they were from American Printing House for the Blind. But y'all, textured paper, any textured paper would work. We just wanted it to have where it had where you could peel off the back and easily adhere it. But you just as easily could use a glue stick. And hey, glue sticks can be fun too. Or glue. So we use really low-tech materials.
Thanks, Tina, for sharing this with us. I think many of us who taught in elementary classes in either schools for the blind or in other situations often taught our students to read those kinds of graphs, charts, maps, but seldom were they ever taught to or allowed to make their own. So I think that's a really wonderful, wonderful slant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That means a lot, especially coming from you. Thank you.
It's all working? Yep. Thank you. That was really interesting, Tina, and it's nice to actually know what you look like for having read your papers. In Australia, it's the law that every student has equitable access to tactile graphics and text in their publications and their examinations. And I'm just wondering, in the US, if they're getting limited exposure to tactile, interpreting tactile graphics and diagrams and tables. Are you finding, is this an issue when it comes to examinations and accessing information in their texts?
Well, I think it depends on where you go, because I think some of our students get a lot more exposure than others. I think sometimes it is, I mean, it just depends on a lot of variables, the training of the teacher, the expertise of the teacher, the materials the teachers have. I'm like, I don't think there's like, I wish I could say every child received the same level of service, and I don't think I can say that in the United States. Well, and the funny part about it is even within our states, we're not always united. Because I got to tell you, there are, 41 districts in South Carolina, plus the School for the Blind, so I suspect that we have probably about 42 different ways of doing things in just South Carolina. And we're a small state. We're not even one of the larger states. So I think that's something we do. So I will tell you that the part of this was kind of an extension of that other research that Penny had done before, that I had just played a really small role, but it just like really, like what they learned was so intriguing to me, I wanted to really like delve in more. And then I just so believe that our young students, that if we get them off on the right path, that, you know, this can just lead to academic success throughout their lives. And so I think that was the other part of it. So the other part is in South Carolina, because I mentioned that we have one thermoform machine in our whole state, but yet that's how our, on those high stakes exams, that's how they find their graphics. And one of the teachers, because a lot of times they're in a training program while they're actually teaching, one of their teachers came back and she was just horrified, saying that her student was really thrown. He's a really bright young man, but he was really thrown because of the texture of the paper and everything. He just kept saying, this feels different, this feels different. I don't get this, this feels different. And she really wondered how much his performance was impacted because he was not accustomed. Now, I'm really happy it's not a total success story, but we actually have met now with the Department of Education in South Carolina, and we explained that we just don't have a lot of access to these types of materials unless they happen to have a textbook with those in them. They may not see them all year long except for on that exam. And so what they're doing is, it didn't happen this year, but next year our students will have, like, basically they release like graphics and like questions from previous tests, and they're going to put those in and have the same entity that's going to, my understanding is the same entity that actually produces our graphics is going to produce those so that our students can practice before they take the test. So the really cool part about it is that when, you know, when we find out something, when a teacher tells us, then we work really hard to try to figure it out. But we probably still have a ways to go. I don't know if anyone from US would like to add to that.
Four. Thank you. Really interesting. Excuse me. Really interesting, Tina. My background is a TVI, and one of the things that I have found over the years for practicing tactile graphics is going into the old exams from Braille Challenge, and they have been fabulous for our students, not only preparing for the Braille Challenge, but also just to have a variety of tactile graphics to really, you know, maps or graphs or whatever it is. And I love the fact that you had the students do their own labeling. One of the things I found interesting is when I had my student work with a sighted peer to create a graph together, and that worked really well because the sighted child learned a ton of stuff. Yeah, it was really good. But thank you very much for sharing this.
Well, thank you. And I love the idea about the Braille Challenge, because they do release all of their previous tests, and they are a great resource. So I will say we use those with our students, but I use those within our training program too. I'm like, hey, we all need practice. Anyone else? Thank you again. It's just been an absolute honor to be here and share. Thank you.
I suspect there's a goodie bag coming for you sometime.
Oh.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. We have a goodie bag for her.
And thank you. As a blind adult, I can tell you I love tactile graphics, and especially when they don't involve animals. I'm really bad at animals, you know, a head, a body, a tail. They all look the same to me. My husband Doug is awesome at animals. He can look at different tactile graphics and tell cats from dogs, from cows, from elephants. And anyway, I think sometimes about tactile graphics and ICEB, because there was a time when ICEB did have a tactile graphics committee. We do not now, but because BANA is doing a great job of having tactile graphics guidelines that do incorporate UEB. So I don't know exactly what role there might be for ICEB in the realm of tactile graphics, except to say how much we love them. And as a blind adult, I don't feel I have enough tactile graphics in my life. Thank you, Maria, for the tactile maps. I love maps. I mean, just looking at this room, who knew? You know, I mean, it's so weird. Why? But anyway, so I personally own a Zycam machine just so that I can make my own tactile graphics when I want to. That's how I made the flag book. But they're great, and 3D printing. I mean, it's another whole level of beyond tactile graphics, and I have a 3D printer too. So that's another whole story. I'm absolutely having a ball 3D printing and making my own, learning how to program a 3D printing and making, designing my own things I want to 3D print. So it is fun. Yes.
Microphone one. Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon, everyone. Sorry. Can I have...
You may.
Two different announcements really quick, please. One is that I have emailed 7 of you about your flights home. You do not have to use our service, but I need to know what you want to do, because I don't know when you're leaving. If you don't get an email from me, it's because you've already told me, and I do know when you're leaving. The other thing is that later today, you will get another email from me that has the link for the New Zealand Opera demonstration tomorrow morning. Now, that demonstration will not be very long, and it's a demonstration of surtitles, so don't worry about if you don't like opera. Please, would you mind, if you can, firing up your wireless connection and having a look at it. I'm sorry that we don't have pictures for you, but the cost in the end was prohibitive. But we do have a banner and flags, which we're pretty proud of, really. And so if you look out for, there are 7 of you getting an email from me about your flights, all of you who have name badges should get an email from me about the New Zealand Opera surtitles issue tomorrow morning. We think this is a really important, every talk this week's been important, but this is unusual because it's talking about surtitles and it's talking about a way of delivering them, which could even ultimately include surtitles on television programs and all sorts of things.
Those of us who are iPhone users may have had the experience of looking at Braille subtitles associated with video description. They're not subtitles exactly, but the Braille video description or even subtitles. And we know that the way that's implemented on an iPhone is very difficult to use because it doesn't automatically refresh and you have to try to track it and chase it down the page and it's so easy to get out of sync with it and then you have to find it and you're busy thinking about finding it rather than what it's actually saying and it's not a very seamless or particularly enjoyable experience. And I'm told by Paul Brown that this is absolutely beautiful because it refreshes automatically and you just have to keep up. Paul Brown. Yes, Paul Brown would like to speak.
So I need to be careful because Brad from the opera is coming this morning to test everything here during the coffee break. I think he's saying, you know, that we have to be careful till it's all tested. But that was the big problem. So initially, on the iPhone and a Braille display, the phone would move in terms of speech, but you had to move around to find the next surtitle. They did some stuff with refreshing the page, and now the Braille moves automatically after a certain amount of time, and that depends on when the next surtitle is in the spreadsheet, as it were, because it's all done by timings in a spreadsheet. And Mary's right, anything that is written and can go into spreadsheet form could have this done. So foreign language films, music scores themselves, they use it in the opera for their music. So if you were you had a Braille display and you were singing, probably not very good for playing the piano, but if you were singing, you could follow a score that moved bar by bar. I think it's one of these things, and I've been involved with it from the beginning as a kind of checking it worked. I don't know any of the techie stuff. One of the other things is, and I don't want to steal Brad's thunder, is it's a website, so there's no new app or anything. You just need to click on a link and you're there. But I think the possibilities, I think we've probably not thought of them all yet, to be honest.
So I have a question, Paul. If this website that we're being given a link to, can we just go there and see it work, or are we going to see it work in real time tomorrow?
You're going to see it work in real time tomorrow, because okay. Brad has to set the cues.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could be set just for any time, but my understanding is you'll probably just set them up tomorrow.
So we should all have our displays?
You should have your Braille displays and phones.
And phone, okay.
Unless your Braille display connects directly to the internet.
Yes.
And, you know.
I have a laptop. That'll work as well?
Yes. Okay, yes, I've done good. It on a laptop.
Okay.
Yep.
Good. Laptop, this will
phone.
Be fun.
Yep.
Right. Another first world problem. Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. Thank you. All right. We will take a break now, and we will reconvene at 10:30 with the report of the Braille Technical Committee. Thank you. Yes? Oh, we have a question.
Could I just make a quick announcement about morning tea? It's at the back of the room on the bar as usual. All the Lamingtons had been arranged for us in a beautiful chess board pattern with the raspberry ones and the chocolate ones.
Oh my.
We have we've made a mess of their lovely organisation, but we've put all of the chocolate ones now at the right hand end of the bar and all and all of the raspberry ones at the left hand end of
great.
The bar. So you can, if you want to know which one you're getting, hopefully that system will help. Also, if you want gluten-free or any of the vegan kind of ones, there are cupcakes meeting many dietary options, but not all, just around the further around the corner of the bar.
Hang on a minute.
Not Lamingtons.
I was also asked to make an announcement that the hotel does attempt to recycle. So if you, especially at lunch, if you have some material that's recyclable, if you could just put it on the bar where the bags are, then the hotel will recycle it rather than putting it in the trash. Thank you. Okay, thank you.